This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
True North Store's beverage clubs just got bigger. Buy six Celsius, Pure Leaf Tea, Starbucks Energy, or Pepsi 1 liter flavors and get the seventh free. Whether you're craving an energy boost or just something to quench your thirst, we've got the drink for you. As a True Rewards member, sip and save with our clubs when you buy six and get the seventh free. Download now from your favorite app store for more details. True North Convenience Stores and True Rewards. Fast, friendly, clean.
Yeah, sure thing.
Hey, you sold that car yet?
Yeah, sold it to Carvana.
Oh, I thought you were selling to that guy.
The guy who wanted to pay me in foreign currency, no interest over 36 months? Yeah, no. Carvana gave me an offer in minutes, picked it up, and paid me on the spot. It was so convenient.
Just like that?
Yeah.
No hassle?
None.
That is super convenient.
Sell your car to Carvana and swap hassle for convenience. Pickup fees may apply.
Greetings, everybody. Welcome to another week of WCCO Outdoors on News Talk 830. It is Sunday, January 19th, 2025. If you were going to pick a weekend maybe not to enjoy the great outdoors, well, I don't think I'd hold it against you if this was the one you chose. Let's face it, a lot of great playoff football this weekend. But no denying, we are in the heart of the hard water season, and what a great ice fishing season is shaping up. We've talked ice fishing a lot here in recent weeks, and looking ahead to open water, spring and summer, I would remind folks that the 2025 Boundary Waters Canoe Area Wilderness Permit Reservation Process opens 10 days from now, January 29th at 9 a.m. That is a Wednesday morning. If you're looking to get a permit to go and enjoy the Boundary Waters this year, that's when that process kicks off. You can go to recreation.gov. to get that process going that morning. You can also make reservations by phone, 877-444-6777. I like to remind folks of that deadline every year. It was always on my calendar. I haven't been getting up there as frequently anymore, and I've gotten pretty good at finding low-priority permits that I can pick up, usually on shorter notice. But some of those key entry points, those permits are very popular. They go fast. So if you want to plan your trip for this year, again, Wednesday morning, January 29th, 9 a.m. is when the permitting process kicks off this year. Back to this week's show, we've got a couple good guests. Tim Spielman, editor of Minnesota Outdoor News, is joining me. He hasn't been with me on this broadcast in a year. We're going to recap the 2025 Minnesota Department of Natural Resources Roundtable, which was held two Fridays ago now, on Friday, January 10th. I wasn't able to discuss that on last week's broadcast, but we've got lots of time today, so Tim and I will chat about that. And then Kelly Straka, the Minnesota DNR's Fish and Wildlife Division Director, she's been in that job since last summer. She'll join me. We will talk to her some more about the roundtable. I'll also try to ask Kelly some hard questions about chronic wasting disease management down in the Southeast. We'll see if we get to that. Dedicated listeners to this broadcast know that that's been on my mind. So we'll try to talk about some bigger white-tailed deer management issues here in Minnesota, since deer was not on the agenda at the roundtable. But what else is going on across Minnesota's outdoor scene during this arguably coldest week of the year? Typically this third week of January is as cold as it gets in Minnesota. The days are already getting a little longer, and now I think the temperatures should start to slowly trend up, although it doesn't feel that way this weekend. Like I say, lots of ice, good ice. Folks are ice fishing. Some of this, I won't call it freezing and thawing, but fluctuations in temperatures. We're getting some reports of some pretty crazy ice heaves out there. So be real careful out on the ice. If you encounter an ice heave, you don't want to cross it. Wait till someone at a local resort gets a bridge across it. You don't want to be crossing open water. I'd like to think that's obvious, but heaves are places, even during the coldest days of winter, where you can have a dangerous situation. So we want to continue to urge everyone to be super safe on the ice this year, even though we've got, like I say, a really gangbusters ice fishing season off and running. The other report that I'm seeing on social media, talked to some of my bird watching friends about, is it is an owl eruption year. That's eruption with an I. This happens not every year. It probably happens every 3 years, 4 years, something like that. There's probably a birder out there who's mad, doesn't think I have it exactly right. But what happens is you get a lot of these owls from Canada, different species than we have here throughout the year. They don't necessarily nest in Minnesota. We're talking great gray owls. We're talking boreal owls, hawk owls. They're really cool-looking species. They're found more in Canada, the boreal forests up there. And for some reason, you know, every few years, they don't, it's not technically migration, but they come down and they spend at least part of the winter here. A lot of them die. I think some of them do make their way back up into Canada. It's related to food sources, I think. Voles, they eat a lot of voles and mice, and those populations fluctuate. And when that happens, these birds head down into Minnesota and other places. Snowy owls, another big one, right? Those are probably the ones that get the most attention because they are very distinctive looking. Also, I believe they're our largest owl by weight, the snowy owl, even heavier, a little heavier than a great horned owl. Even though the great gray looks bigger, it's taller, it's longer, it's not as heavy. There's a lot of feathers, a lot of light feathers in a great gray owl. So if you've got birdwatching friends or you spend much time on social media, you've probably seen a lot of owl photos popping up in northern Minnesota. Kind of cool. Before I grab a break, I see the Minnesota DNR is looking for some public input on one of the state's most important fishing lakes, especially an ice fishing lake, Lake of the Woods. The agency's got a draft update of a fisheries management plan for the lake that includes management goals, objectives, strategies, that sort of stuff for the next decade. Very important border water and an incredible fishing lake. If you've never been up there, I love Lake of the Woods. They're doing a public input meeting on Wednesday, February 5th up in Baudette. But folks from anywhere in the state can review the plan and chime in through Sunday, February 16th. So you got a little less than a month if you want to make a comment on the plan. There's a Lake of the Woods page on the DNR website. Just go to mndnr.gov and search Lake of the Woods, and you'll find all the information you want. You can read the plan in all its glory and then make a comment. I like to push that, folks. I like to encourage folks to participate in democracy and participate in these natural resources discussions. The DNR does offer opportunities for public comment. So get involved. Make your comments. You don't like how something's done at the agency? Chime in. And then if you don't like it, then you can call WCCO Outdoors and talk to me and complain about it. How's that sound? With that, well, how about I grab a break? More of the broadcast. We'll check in with Tim Spielman and talk about that DNR roundtable when we return. This is WCCO Outdoors.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW. Because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour. The boots that turn grocery aisles into runways. And all the styles that show off the many sides of you, from daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between, because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
Hey, I'm Andy. If you don't know me, it's probably because I'm not famous. But I did start a men's grooming company called Harry's. The idea for Harry's came out of a frustrating experience I had buying razor blades. Most brands were overpriced, overdesigned, and out of touch. At Harry's, our approach is simple. Here's our secret. We make sharp, durable blades and sell them at honest prices for as low as $2 each. We care about quality so much that we do some crazy things, like buy a world-class German blade factory. Obsessing over every detail means we're confident in offering a 100% quality guarantee. Millions of guys have already made the switch to Harry's, so thank you if you're one of them. And if you're not, we hope you give us a try with this special offer. Get a Harry starter set with a 5-blade razor, weighted handle, shave gel, and a travel cover. All for just $3 plus free shipping. Just go to harrys.com and enter code FLEX at checkout. That's harrys.com, code FLEX. Enjoy!
Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+.
Before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recaps. And after that, we're going to keep going as we recap every episode of season 2.
The Severance podcast with Ben Stiller and Adam Scott is presented by State Farm. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Listen and follow now on Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Take me out to the ball game.
What are you doing?
Did you know DirecTV has the most MLB games?
So you're singing?
Yeah, they put your favorite teams front and center right when you turn it on. Buy me some cold cuts and flapjacks.
Those aren't even the words.
I'm allergic to peanuts.
Stream DirecTV, home of the most MLB games. Visit DirecTV.com. Claim based on total games offered on national and regional sports networks. RSNs available with choice package or higher. Availability of RSNs varies by zip code and package.
WCCO Outdoors News Talk 830, Rob Dreisline back with you on this Sunday, January 19th. I recognize that it is cold out there, folks, but I want to remind everybody that tomorrow is Free State Park Day here in Minnesota. The Minnesota DNR is waiving vehicle permit fees at all 73 state parks and recreation areas tomorrow, January 20th. The DNR has 4 of these free park days each year. The next one is Saturday, April 26th. So I'll try to remind folks as that date and the other 2 come around later in 2025. I do indeed recognize it's a viciously cold forecast for tomorrow, but nonetheless, if you want to get out there and enjoy a distinctively Minnesotan season, maybe just for a few minutes, you got an opportunity to do it for free tomorrow. We've been talking during the show about the DNR Roundtable that was held last Friday, January 10th, and here to talk about that a little bit is our friend Tim Spielman. Tim is the editor of Minnesota Outdoor News, and Tim, another roundtable has come and gone. It was last Friday, January 10th. We survived. They had a good crowd, didn't they?
Yeah. Well, according to the DNR social media, there were 400 people there. I don't know if I saw 400 people. I mean, there were a lot, but it almost seemed like fewer than past years, didn't it? Maybe it's because the food lane moved faster.
I actually thought it was maybe up a little bit, Tim. I could believe that 400 number, especially, in the morning. That morning sessions was packed, and there were some people who came and went. I talked to some DNR people who presented in the morning who weren't there in the afternoon, so maybe there was a little bit of that going on. I know going into it, you were a little more upbeat about the agenda this year. I mean, that's something we've complained about a little bit, is the agenda is not always all that good. I was disappointed. I pointed out in my column, the deer were not on the agenda. I mean, that's our most important game animal in the state, and there's quite a bit going on with deer right now.
Yeah. You almost go into an event like this thinking that there's no way we wouldn't talk about at least some deer issue.
Yeah.
And then when you bring it up, I go, oh, yeah. I guess I hadn't noticed that going in. I'm sure the latest in CWD was a little bit late to get on the agenda, maybe, but still you'd think there'd be an opportunity within one of these scheduled sessions to talk about it a little bit. You got to talk about current events, too.
Sure.
Not just the update to a 10-year plan or something like that. There seems to be a current event lacking to the roundtable. And again, I can sit and criticize it, but I did think it was overall better than past years.
Yeah, I just thought, they had 16 small sessions there, and one of them they couldn't devote to deer. But
I was going to say, along those lines, you mentioned our favorite game animal. Someone sent me an email just yesterday and said, how about our favorite game fish? I know there was musky talk, and I'm sure we'll allude to that a little bit, but how about, someone said, wouldn't that have been a fine opportunity to explain the science behind why the DNR is now apparently supporting a reduction in the walleye limit? A discussion about that would have been awesome. I mean, that should have been, I can't remember the roundtables of days gone by, but do you remember that being part of a discussion in past years? I don't remember it. Maybe it was something that was discussed for 10 minutes in one session. But if we're going full bore ahead with something like that, If ever there was a time when I want to sit and listen to the why, that would be it.
I think it's come up sometimes in the evenings, Tim. They do that fishing back porch kind of thing. It seemed like it would come up there. But you are totally right. Until you just brought it up now, I didn't hear a whisper about that issue during the entire day. And that's a pretty big deal where it would have been good to get some feedback. Now, I know they have these fisheries working groups, Tim, that are, you know, working on some of these things. I think they might do a kind of a summit with some of those folks on those committees later in March, April, getting into May. Maybe MinFish will host its summit again in June, and it could come up there. But still, you had a lot of movers and shakers in one place, and that's a huge, huge change. And for it not to come up during the entire day, that's a very good point.
Yeah, well, don't thank me. Thank the emailer.
We did talk muskies a little bit. That was a pretty good session. I'm going to try to write something up on that in more detail for next week's print edition of Outdoor News. The muskie guys have been pretty down on where muskie management is and where it's been for the past better part of 10 years. But I got the feeling during that session that the muskie folks feel like we're turning the corner, that we've got an improving rapport with the DNR, and we're updating the muskie plan. Yeah, there was a gentleman there representing the Muskie and Pike Association. We had Jeremy Smith from Linder Media and some others that were pretty upbeat. That's where forward-facing sonar, of course, came up, the old live sonar, live scoping, all that good stuff.
Yep.
It didn't degenerate into a massive complain session about that, but it certainly was a topic. And that was a topic I heard roaming the hallways, too. I don't know how much you heard about it, Tim.
Well, I was not on the fish track, as they call it, at the round table. So I didn't really discuss fish. But in the whole scheme of muskie management and timeline, I guess I'm wondering, it seems like muskie management and where the DNR was headed was an issue maybe shortly before the forward-facing sonar came along. I guess my question is, what, you know, when you talk about management, a lot of it boils down to catch-and-release type regulations. And basically in Minnesota, we're at that tipping point where it is pretty much catch-and-release with the minimum size being what it is. What is it? Is it 54, 56 now?
Yeah, it's way up there, yeah.
Yeah, so my question is then, when they talk about the DNR's muskie management, does it boil down to stocking and rearing and that kind of thing?
I think so. There's not a lot of natural muskie reproduction in the state. I think that's a lot of it, Tim. And what's happened also is we've seen a reduction of quality fishing on some of our big lakes. And when that happens, guys go to the smaller lakes and they put more pressure on those, especially those stocked fish. If you have stocked fish, they're going to be in a lot of those smaller lakes. So I heard some of that. And then, again, to swing back to forward-facing sonar, I mean, these guys do feel like there's been a lot of extra pressure on them. And you know, they talked about finding dead muskies on Leech Lake. And, most people, they're catching and releasing muskies. But one of those fish gets caught 20 times, you start to get some hooking mortality. And I think that's the concern we're starting to see with muskies in regards to live sonar.
Yep, makes sense.
I suspect we will be talking about that more in coming weeks. This is WCCO Outdoors on News Talk 830. Rob Dreisline chatting with Tim Spielman from Outdoor News and recapping DNR Roundtable 2025, which occurred last Friday, January 10th. At the Doubletree Hotel down in Bloomington, a pretty good crowd, as Tim and I discussed earlier. So you were, like you say, more on the maybe some of the hunting track. There was a duck and pheasant session that focused on the fact that the DNR updated its duck and pheasant plans, or it's working on doing that?
Yeah, they've both been updated. Tori McCormick had a story about that last year. I don't even recall when. It might have been summer or fall. It was a little while ago now. So yeah, they've been updated, and you know, with plans like that, sometimes it's really hard to tell what the the old compared with the new, you know, what exactly has changed. And I couldn't break it down for you right now. I guess what I came away from after listening to that was it was a chance to hear from our new wildlife section leader, which is Dave Traba. He was the interim for quite a while after Kelly Straka got promoted to Division of Fish and Wildlife Chief. And Dave's been around the DNR for 30-some years now, I think. And so he is the new wildlife section leader. And I don't know about you, but I've talked to Dave many, many times over the years, and he's always seemed like a real straight shooter. And I think people listening to him at the roundtable during that session probably thought the same things. And I thought Dave got off on a good foot in that regard.
Yeah, I was really glad to see that hire. Tori McCormick doing a nice profile of Dave in this week's print edition of Outdoor News, also available online. Yeah, I mean, a guy who's been working in the field in the heart of, you know, an area that's dealt with some challenges for duck and pheasant management. So he knows what needs to get done out there in the field. I appreciated Dave's candor during the session that I caught. Really blunt, even. And at times I was like, wow, that's really blunt for a DNR employee. I appreciated the things that he said about what we need to get done on the ground out there. And man, he's just what we need in that position.
Yeah, whether or not some of the things he'd like to see done are doable to the benefit of, I think, part of the, well, obviously we're talking ducks and pheasants, but he referenced Duck Biology 101 is having temporal wetlands, and the availability of those in Minnesota keeps going down, really. You know, and we talked about tile and the extent of it and where does it end and probably doesn't end. You know, these are conservation issues that have been ongoing for decades now. And what to do with them, I don't think anybody has any real good answers, but at least with Dave, you know, if they're not getting swept under the rug, these are things we need to talk about. And there are new issues, too. Dave and I talked not too long ago about wind farm easements and how that figures into the mix. So he's been around. He's been in western Minnesota and southwestern Minnesota. He grew up in southeastern Wisconsin, as we talked about. He mentioned in the story when he first decided what he's going to do for a career, he thought about working with forest wildlife.
Up in Ely,
Yeah, so he has plenty of background. He's been in the field, and frankly, it's always nice to get people from the field who have been out there and who communicate well with people. They know how to talk to the commoner, and so many times you've got upper management that has no idea how to do that effectively, and Dave can.
He threw out a stat about the amount of tile line that's still going in that, wow, it shocked me. I don't remember what it was exactly. Maybe we can circle back to that sometime, but anyway, good hire. So congratulations to Dave Traba. Tim, we're about out of time, but for the outdoors, the old funding mechanism that I think Greg Cavalli said, we've been talking about this for 2 years, and God bless Greg for bringing that up, but it's been longer than that, I think. I think it's been 3 or 4 since the DNR first brought that up at a round table. And Greg's point was we're still not hearing anything tangible, and I totally agree. You know, it all comes down to fees and taxes, and no one wants to say that aloud, I guess.
Well, when that first came out, there was a list of things that we need to be doing. And as I probably mentioned before, I'm like, isn't that what any business would be doing? Isn't this what state agencies do? And, you know, you're looking for the most efficient way to do things. You're looking for duplication of things that you can eliminate, streamlining things, yada, yada, you know, the whole business to and setting priorities for spending, things like that. That was all part of it. So these new revelations, you know, it'll be pretty exciting to find out in 2 or 3 years what the heck they are.
Yeah, if they ever come down. I threw out, hey, why don't we add an endorsement for a crossbow? The legislature's got to renew that. There's an opportunity to say, hey, we're liberalized this season. Everybody, you're going to get this opportunity. How about a little sacrifice with the dollars going to the Division of Wildlife? Just trying to throw out a tangible idea that I don't hear from anyone else. So
maybe they jotted it down, or they will.
I hope so. We'll see. If they'll probably ignore me, but that's all right. All right, Tim. Well, thank you. DNR Roundtable 2025 recap. Thanks, and have a good week ahead.
Yep, you too.
All right, Tim Spielman, editor at Minnesota Outdoor News. He was at the DNR Roundtable last Friday, January 10th, offering some of his insight on a recap there. Let's grab a break. More of the broadcast after these messages. WCCO Outdoors on News Talk 830 on this Sunday, January 19th. Welcome back to the show, everybody. Going to have a DNR guest with us here in just a moment. We'll probably talk chronic wasting disease a little bit. Before I get to Kelly Straka, however, I did get a couple press releases in the past week from the Wisconsin DNR. Again, chronic wasting disease continues to expand over there. They find it in new counties all the time. It's hard to believe there's many counties left in Wisconsin where they haven't found it. But one new one is Manitowoc County. That's just south of Door County, a long ways from Minnesota. But on January 8th, we got a press release from the Wisconsin DNR saying they confirmed CWD in a wild deer in Chippewa County. That's just north of Eau Claire, due east of Minneapolis, due east of the Twin Cities. So again, CWD creeping ever closer to east central Minnesota from the Badger State across the St. Croix. With that, I am very excited to have a guest join me now who has not been on the broadcast. Hard to believe because she's been with the DNR for a while now and had a very high-profile role since last June. Her name is Kelly Straka. She's the Minnesota Department of Natural Resources Fish and Wildlife Division Director. Kelly, did I get that all right?
You did, yes. Thank you for having me.
You were the Wildlife Division Director for a couple years?
Yeah, so I was the Wildlife Section Manager. I started in that role at the end of 2021. Originally from Minnesota, but came over from Michigan, started heading up that wildlife section under the former Fish and Wildlife Division Director, Dave Ohlfeldt. I was appointed to this position upon Dave's retirement in July of just this past year. So I've been in this role for about 6 months now.
Great. Now, I remember when our DNR stole you from Michigan, there were a number of people in high places in the agency, some of the brass, that was pretty smug. They were very happy to bring you on board, and I can see why. I think you've done a great job so far, Kelly. You're out there a lot. You're representing the agency. So thanks for what you do for fish and wildlife management here in our state. Let's jump into some topics, though, some hard questions. Let's get the compliments out of the way and see if I can ask you some hard questions now. First of all, we've got a deer plan here in Minnesota. 2019 to 2028. It's a 10-year deer plan. We're halfway through, and the agency looking for some feedback. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, it's really exciting, and I'm glad we were able to talk about it a little bit today. And so that deer plan, as you said, Rob, it was finalized in 2019, and certainly that plan lays out some of the goals, the objectives, the strategies for how we want to manage deer over a 10-year period, right? So one of the things that I think is really important about having management plans when it comes to our natural resources, whatever species you're talking about, is that ability of taking the periodic check of looking at, hey, are we meeting our goals? Are we doing what we say we're going to be doing? And understanding that things are continually changing in the environment, pressures on deer change. And so it's important to take a step back and say, hey, are there any different things we have to consider now that maybe weren't at play in 2019? You know, I mean, that was, when you think about it, that was even pre-COVID, which, you know, the landscape has changed in a lot of ways. And so we start to look at a 10-year plan and say, all right, we're 5 years in. What do we need to be doing a little bit differently? This is a really important time to get that engagement with the public again.
So we're roughly halfway through it. What's the DNR self-analysis of where we are with the plan thus far? What do you feel like, you know, we've successfully accomplished? What are some priorities in the back half of this plan over the next 5 years from your perspective?
A big part of it is again, taking a look at what did we say we were going to do and are we meeting those? And so it's a little bit of a report card, right? For our mm-hmm. staff and the agency as a whole. So when you go into, and I know, Rob, I know you're going to share with our listeners here today the link there, but it's pretty easy to get to mndnr.gov/deer plan. But the not only the plan is there, but also this midpoint review. And so you can go in and say, hey, what is that scorecard? How have we scored ourselves? It's there. What do I think is going to be an important thing for engagement? I don't think it's going to be a surprise to anybody that the role of predation on deer, primarily by wolves, has been a huge issue and a huge topic. And now I expect that is going to be a lot of the interest from listeners too across the state, especially in the northern part of the state. I mean, that's where I live. That's where I hunt. So I'm with you. You know, like, these are the concerns we have to look at. We do have, in addition to predation, winter severity. You know, and this time period since 2019 has certainly seen some severe winters, challenges with wintering habitat. Where are deer able to find that good winter habitat? That's important too. Those sort of three external pressures, I think, are probably weighing higher in the northern part of the state than maybe our farmland or more agricultural zones elsewhere in Minnesota. And so it's important to look at those areas where we actually have deer above densities, you know, above desired densities. Is our management over the past 5 years, are we seeing appropriate steps towards better balancing some of those populations as well? And so it really is just a chance to have a scorecard and then looking at what might need to be shifted within the plan for the next 5 years.
I suspect a lot of listeners were happy to hear you bring up, you know, some specific, sometimes hot topics that, you know, the public wants to talk about. I'm sure they're glad to hear you say those aloud also. Again, I want to remind folks, mndnr.gov/deer plan, very easy website to remember. You can view the deer plan. You can comment on the review. And on Tuesday, January 28th, there's going to be a webinar. If folks want to jump in, I presume you're going to be on that, Kelly, some other DNR folks. talking about the plan, and then there'll be opportunity for feedback, I presume, for people who are on that. And it looks like public comments can be made till Friday, February 7th. So we still got a few weeks left on that. You're listening to WCCO Outdoors. We are chatting with Kelly Straka. She is the Minnesota Department of Natural Resources Fish and Wildlife Division Director. She's been in that role since last July. We talked about the DNR's mid-review of its deer plan. Let's talk chronic wasting disease a little bit, Kelly. It's unfortunate what we got going in the Southeast. We basically have kind of hit critical mass with CWD in three deer permit areas, 646, 647, and 648. I happen to hunt myself in one of those. And the DNR is adjusting its management strategy based on a plan that already exists going forward for those three DPAs. Is that kind of the summary?
Yeah, that's the summary. And thanks for bringing this up. This is it's a timely topic. B, I will agree with you. It's not positive news. It's not what we want to see. The reality is the longer you have this disease on the landscape, the more likely it's going to be that it's going to at least gradually increase. And this is not just true for CWD. This is infectious disease dynamics in general. One of the challenges that I think we've had in the Southeast, one of the things that we have done really well as a state, and I will say this because this started long before I was back home in Minnesota. When I was down in Missouri for a while, I was over in Michigan, and looking at what Minnesota was doing, the engagement from our hunters, the involvement and support from local landowners was incredible. And I remember being in other states and being like, how are you doing this? How is Minnesota really able to pull off this incredibly cohesive, aggressive approach in the fight against this disease? And it worked. I don't want anyone to think that we failed. That is not the way we have to look at this. The truth is, over time, this disease is going to continue to spread within the herd. We know that. And our management tools are limited. Rob, you mentioned our CWD management plan. If anybody has not seen that, I really encourage you to look it up. It's on our website. It talks about, okay, if we're seeing this level of infection, X level of infection, like let's say a really low level infection, we've been able to keep the disease really low in the Southeast, right? Hovering around that, if I remember right, is around that 1% prevalence, which just means 1% of the deer we were testing were positive. When you're dealing with that low amount of infection within the herd, the best management tool is something called targeted culling or localized culling. That is intentionally, but yeah, I don't want to go into too much detail, Rob, but you know, really focused to minimize the management action footprint. We're not going to go in and eradicate all the deer. What's going to be a better approach is a really focused targeting the family groups, right? And that's what our management has been doing. And it's been good at keeping that infection level low over time. But again, over time, we're going to start to see fatigue. We're going to start to see where people don't want to keep going out and harvesting high numbers of deer, or you can lose landowner support, or we can see deer seeking refuges in areas where we can't get to them. We can't access them. Overall, we have seen an increase in prevalence of CWD in three DPAs in the Southeast. This does not mean we're going to stop our fight. What this does mean is that we do have to shift the management tools that we're using. So if anyone is interested in what we're going to be doing instead, we will certainly be doing a lot more engagement, a lot more conversations about what is going to be the best approach now that we're at this different level of infection. It's all laid out in that management plan, and we are following that plan. I want to make it very clear, we are not stepping back from our management of CWD. We will continue to be aggressive to protect this important resource.
Kelly, I see, you know, we're at 5%, 5, 6% to some of these DPAs now. Some of the modeling suggests that in 3 years, we could be in the 15% range, tripling in 3 years. We see what's happened in Wisconsin. West Central Wisconsin looks a whole heck of a lot like Southeast Minnesota. I'm really worried that in another 3 years or 10 years from now, are we going to see infection rates, prevalency rates similar to what we're seeing west of Madison, Wisconsin, where we're getting into that 40, 45% range? Calm me down a little bit. We're at 5% now. I almost feel like it's inevitable we're going to be in that 40, 45% range in a decade. It's like we're watching the frog boil. What do we do to prevent the frog from boiling? Are you convinced that the state plan that we have now can prevent that from happening?
First of all, when you start talking about modeling and certainly looking elsewhere, where yes, there are places across the country that have this disease, you know, 45, 50, 55%, right? Certainly they see really high levels. I can tell you that I don't think, understanding that we have strong support in this state at multiple levels to fight this disease, I think unless we were to completely throw up our hands and walk away, I think it's going to be extremely unlikely that we find ourselves at that level of infection.
Dave, I hope you're right, Kelly.
Thank you. I think as a state, I think we've committed to fighting this disease. And as long as we continue to fight against this disease, I do not think that we're going to see those levels of infection, certainly not anytime soon.
And I think I've made it clear, you've got my support in the battle for whatever that's worth, Outdoor News and myself. I'm all in on supporting the DNR on aggressive tactics to beat this thing back. I understand it's a very challenging, and I don't want to call it a losing battle, but I guess I haven't seen anyone win the battle yet where CWD has been established. And so I understand what we're up against. Kelly, I know we're about out of time. Thank you for joining us. Just quick look back at the roundtable. I thought it was a pretty good event back on January 10th. Were you happy? Any quick highlights you'd mention?
Hey, yeah, I'm really glad you bring up the roundtable. So this was my first roundtable as the Fish and Wildlife Division Director. Certainly took in a lot of feedback from last year, and I think we paid attention to it. So one of the biggest things that I was happy to see is that we allowed for more space between sessions, more people to kind of network, to talk to each other. I saw great engagement from the audience. Hopefully we got a good variety of topics. I really wanted to bring up some of our really important specific to fish and wildlife management topic. So we talked about muskies. We talked about the new duck and pheasant plans. If anybody hasn't seen those, we finished those up. So certainly talking about what we're doing to support our upland bird and waterfowl populations across the state. But just really getting out and getting to talk with a lot of people at that venue was really exciting for me. So thanks to everybody who came and who made it possible.
I thought it was well done. I thought it was definitely a step up from some of the more recent roundtables. So congratulations. Kelly, thanks so much for spending a segment with me. Good luck. Stay warm. And I hope the rest of the winter and spring unfolds well for you.
Thank you, Rob. Thanks again for having me. And thanks to your listeners for being here today.
Kelly Straka from the Minnesota Department of Natural Resources. Let's break more of the broadcast after these messages. Our friends at the Minnesota Ice Festival are giving away a winter staycation. Go to WCCORadio.com/contests and click on the Minnesota Ice Festival Staycation Contest link for your chance to score a one-night stay for up to four at the Hampton Inn in Eagan, plus a $100 gift card for your group to the restaurant, burgers, and bottles. For all the details and to enter, go to WCCORadio.com/contests. Welcome back, WCCO Outdoors on News Talk 830, final segment of this week's broadcast, Sunday, January 19th. I sincerely hope everyone is staying warm out there, especially if they're getting out of doors. In the time we have left, thought I'd flesh out a couple news headlines we had here this past week. On Monday, the U.S. Supreme Court rejected a lawsuit by the state of Utah that wanted to transfer more than 18 million acres of federal public lands into the state of Utah's control. Now, the Supreme Court's ruling was by no means dramatic. It was just a brief order that said the motion for leave to file a bill of complaint is denied. So the state of Utah, the governor, the AG out there, some other folks filed this lawsuit directly with the U.S. Supreme Court. Presumably they thought they had a friendly audience given the state of the Supreme Court these days. And SCOTUS saying not interested. Now, that doesn't mean the governor out there et al. Can't file this lawsuit in a lower court and it might work its way up the system like lawsuits like this typically do. But nonetheless, I'll take the win. And a lot of conservation groups were taking the win earlier this week. Backcountry Hunters and Anglers, National Wildlife Federation were issuing press releases. All along, they had adamantly opposed this lawsuit, which was filed, what, in October or November? It hasn't been around that long by the state of Utah. Worth pointing out, it wasn't just Utah. There were like 13 other states that filed amicus, you know, friend of the court briefs on this one. I believe including North Dakota, which WCCO Outdoors has learned, has a governor named Doug Burgum, who's leaving to join the federal government as the new Secretary of Interior. That's the guy that will ultimately be in charge of all our public lands. I caught a few minutes of his confirmation hearing. I think, was that on Thursday? I saw some snippets of that. Nothing too dramatic. I wouldn't say he came out swinging as an ardent conservationist. He said some nice things about national parks and about, you know, the recreation that occurs on public lands. But he also wasn't real frontal about suggesting we need to develop all our Bureau of Land Management properties and housing divisions, that sort of thing. So coming at it maybe a little quieter than some of his predecessors, which is not a terrible thing. Ryan Zinke was the first Interior Secretary under Trump in his first term. And I think Zinke rode into his first day of office on a horse, if memory serves. Who knows? Maybe this Doug Burgum guy will do the same thing. But I just thought his hearing was fairly low-key. One final controversial thought for everybody before we go this week. I've talked a lot about forward-facing sonar on this program. There's concerns that this new technology is putting a lot of extra pressure on our fisheries, particularly crappies, big walleyes, and big muskies. I sat in on a session at last week's DNR roundtable where they talked about muskies, muskie management. And one person during that discussion, I mentioned this in my column this week, suggested that any state record fish caught using forward-facing sonar should not be certified as a new state record, that it's just unfair. It's now what we in the sporting community call fair chase. I thought that was interesting. I suspect there's some folks out there that might be mildly offended by that concept. But I definitely think it's great fuel for discussion as 2025 unfolds. We're going to be hearing more about forward-facing sonar, dear listeners, like it or not. With that, everyone, I'm out of time. Thanks for putting up with me here. I hope you all have a great warming week out of doors. I'm Rob Driesine, signing off for WCCO Outdoors.
It's that time of year again. My schedule is packed with bracket-busting, three-point shooting, nonstop basketball action. I don't want to miss a second of it. That's why I go for a five-hour energy shot. They're perfect for my days packed with back-to-back games or whenever my favorite team is playing late. Five-hour energy keeps me going during the broadcast and the next morning when I need to get myself up and to work. Visit 5hourenergy.com for great deals and to stock up before tip-off.
Hey, it's Gemma Spegg, host of the Open Mind original podcast, Mantra. Every Monday, I'll bring you a new mantra, a simple yet powerful phrase to help you clear your mind and stay grounded amidst the chaos. I'll also share some personal stories, journal prompts, and a weekly challenge to bring each mantra to life. Follow and listen to Mantra, an Odyssey podcast in partnership with Open Mind Studios, available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.